Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. This is one of our good news segments. Look. How are we doing when it comes to small businesses? Okay, let's talk about what small businesses are. But joining me today is Sharon Miller, head of Small Business Bank of America. And I've gotten to work with Sharon personally. So I really love what she stands for, why she stands for it. And so eager to hear about the small business outlook. Is it remaining strong or do we have something to be thinking about? Sharon, thank you for joining me here today. You know, thumbs up, thumbs down, what is it?
Thumbs up, Dr. Pat.
Thumbs up.
Yes. I mean, we're enjoying a period of great economic stability and growth. And so that is what we're hearing from our business and our clients. It's a great environment for business of any size. And those are the types of things that we're hearing from clients across the country.
So, you know, let's talk about how we can plan for the future. And what have you found? I know you look at things, you take a look at studies, you're looking at analysis. So there's a very interesting gathering of data, let's just call it, that just came out. How are business owners feeling as we're moving into not only next half a year, but also we're looking ahead at 2020? Give us some key indicators and what you all have discovered.
What we've discovered is, you know, business owners are planning to hire. 24% said they're going to grow their business by hiring more employees. But even if they don't go from, let's say, 10 to 15 employees this year, they're still going to have to hire. And we know that business owners are job creators. They are the huge impact on our local economies. And so, you know, if I have 10 employees and two leave to go do something else, I'm going to have to still hire two more. So it is a constant, you know, just to stay at that 10 employee level. So people are constantly recruiting, they're attracting talent, and that is that continues to happen. The other thing that we heard from business owners, you know, 67% of them said they're planning to expand. And that may be that they're going to expand in number of locations, could be, you know, they're going to expand their product offering, they're going to buy more technology, whatever it is, but they're going to expand just like you're going to move business locations. So the fact of the matter is people are feeling strong about the local economy, they feel good about their business, and we're at an all-time high in most of these data points.
You know, I think you'd have to pretty much be living under a rock if you're not at least aware of some of the, you know, political undertones that are happening. How do small businesses feel about that? I'm a small business owner, and I know that I have some feelings about it because, of course, you know, as a patriot, I'm somebody that looks at, you know, where do I stand on some of the issues, but does it really affect business?
It does. I mean, you know, there are different things that have impacts. I mean, the political environment, that has an impact. I mean, there's concerns about the current political environment. 65% said they were concerned about it when we asked, mm-hmm. you know, is political environment on your list of concerns? Healthcare, that's something that's number one on the list of concerns for entrepreneurs. So one, healthcare, two, political environment. And we want things to continue to be good and strong and, you know, the economy keep growing and all of those things. And then you have, to your point, there's some things in the news. There's tariffs. There's tax reform. All these things that come into play. And I think the business owners that really just focus on their business and they control what they can control, I think are doing the best in this environment. Because, you know, in this age of 24-hour news, you turn on the TV and it's something new every day.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually can't even turn on my phone without some pop-up thing happening here. You know what I'm saying? It's like pop-up politics. That's what I call it, pop-up politics. Let's talk about, you know, a couple of things that I think are on the top of some people's list. If you live on the East Coast, right, not so much here in the state of Washington, but let's say on the East Coast, I think everybody in states like New Jersey who had a tax implication from the tax laws, meaning they are not going to be able to deduct what they used to deduct, are concerned. Businesses are concerned about taxes, yes or no?
I mean, they are. And so a year ago when we asked businesses, you know, with the tax reform coming into play, how do you feel about this? You know, what we heard from entrepreneurs at that time is this tax reform is going to be a game changer for my business. Today, what we're hearing is it's really neutral. But we also know that there's a lot of entrepreneurs who have filed extensions. The full impact is not yet seen, but I can tell you that, you know, we've gone from game changer to really neutral to no effect. And so taxes are always a concern. Healthcare costs, anytime you're paying more in taxes or you got to pay more, it's less you can invest into your own business. So I think it's important that, you know, that people are grounded, that really it's more neutral than anything. That's what we're hearing right now from business owners.
One of the things that I saw in the report that I was a little bit surprised by, but not really now that I'm talking with you, where are people on how they feel about the national economy versus their local economy? Because I always say, I call this the great divide. Because if you talk to somebody at the national level or you're plugging into some national news, and then you live in some of the cities in this country, they're very different perspectives. But is that really what they're saying to you?
Well, you know, I mean, here are the numbers. So 48% of business owners were confident that the national economy would improve. That's down from 55% in the fall 2018. So down, you know, about, what, seven points year.
Yeah.
When you look at the local economy, 51% expected their local economy will improve over the next 12 months. That's down 54%. So not as big of a fall. And to your point, business is local. And what I found that the bigger divide was is that even though the local and national economy outlook was down year over year, the business itself was up and strong and everything was good. So I had to kind of separate the two and say, okay, why is this? I mean, yes, I think business is more local, so I like that the local economy didn't dip as much as the national. But when you then take that and say, why is business owner outlook for their own business so strong? Because they can control what they can control, and they can adjust, they can be nimble, they can shift. And really, when I sit across the desk from businesses, what they tell me is, hey, I can adjust my plans. I'm nimble enough, and I'm going to grow in spite of what's happening around me.
Yeah, I know we've got a few minutes. I want to talk about the three C's, what I call the three C's of question marks for a lot of people. Climate change, cyber breach, and my other thing that I love, continuity, or what happens just in case. Let's talk about those three things. I live in the Pacific Northwest, and it's hard for me to imagine that the big climate change one is not on people's minds. But is it really a concern?
Well, you know what? This was a report that we asked about this. And yes, I mean, it is a concern of business owners. I mean, certainly it's different in different pockets of the country. That, along with cybersecurity and more breaches in cybersecurity. So are you prepared for what might happen? And then, you know, making sure you have the right business continuity. So if a natural disaster happens, and I kind of categorize all this as preparing for the unexpected, you know, you know that it's going to happen. It's just when. It's not if, it's when. When will a hurricane hit? And we found that in Houston, they were most planned for, a potential issue with natural disaster. And they had in place their continuity plan where they're calling their people to make sure they're okay. So we found that they've had and been through a lot of these impacts and devastation from hurricanes. Just last week, they had more flooding there. So people are, you know, they if they didn't before, they have it now. So it's like, let's let the rest of the country learn from that. And then cyber, you know, as far as cybersecurity is concerned, you know, 80% said they had something in place as it relates to protecting for a cyber breach, but that leaves 20% that don't. And, you know, protecting our clients' data, it's important. And you've got to make sure that you're thinking ahead for these, including, so those three that you just gave. But let's talk about an economic environment. It ebbs and flows. So are you prepared if it really hits you? How are you going to adjust your business plan? Do you have a line of credit in place? You know, when you need those things, you're probably not going to qualify. Why not just set up a foundation for your business and plan for the unexpected?
Wow. You know, Sharon, thank you so much for today. Last question. How do people find out more? There's lots of information and more information. I know that Bank of America is fully committed to small businesses. I know that because I've worked with you. But how can people get more information? How can they address these issues?
Go to bankofamerica.com/smallbusiness, and you can find this report and then other things there. And then right there in the Seattle area, we have specialists in our financial centers ready to talk across the desk. So do it either way, do it both ways, and we want to be a partner for you to grow.
All right, personal message, what are you going to leave us with?
Just continued strength and, you know, just continue to inspire me. This, you know, I love business. I love business owners. They have so much blood, sweat, tears into their business. It's inspiration for every day when we wake up at Bank of America. This is what we do, and it's truly an inspiration.
Thank you. Hey, everybody, Sharon Miller. I'm telling you, I've worked with her personally and the folks at Bank of America, and they will guide you in a direction probably that you can even comprehend in a good way. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, welcome. Hey, this is a good news segment. You know, recently you have heard me talk about my own educational journey and what it was like for me to decide to go back to school after a really long and successful career. Well, one of the things that I want to say to everybody out there is if there was a message to say to all of the parents out there, think about the future for your children. Think about where they are today, where you want them to be, and where you want them to go. But beyond thinking, how about learning something that could literally transform and change the trajectory of what you can do for your kids? Tim Burke joining me here today. Principal in Tailored Solutions, Edward Jones. But more than that, listen. What is it about us parents? What is it about the grandparents? Why don't we save for educational expenses? Well, that's a question, but I think really what we want to do is we want to give you some solutions. Tim, great to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Pat. Appreciate you being here.
You know, look, this is something that I've had multiple conversations with. I've done radio shows over a 15-year period about it. I've shared what it was like for me to go back to school and what that maze that of financial woes I had to go through for all of that. But we can put an end to that. And we can put an end to that with what you are bringing today, the 529 plan. So let's talk about it. You know, do you have any sense of what goes on with folks about saving? Is it that we don't know or that we don't know the right plan?
That's a great question. I think it may be a little bit of both. But I also think, as you mentioned earlier, trying to navigate all of this is a little daunting. So trying to figure out not only how do I start saving, but what's the right way to put this money away is something that we find we answer for our clients all the time. And as you pointed out, I mean, we feel that an education is one of the most important gifts you can give your child or grandchild. And the 529 plan really is a great way to start saving for that, to help put off the costs of education for those kids. Because as you mentioned, you know, I think we were looking nationally, student debt now is over $1.5 trillion. And that is just such a burden to saddle with somebody just coming out of out of college or starting a new career.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to say is, you know, look, there's been a lot of conversation, Tim, and I know you've been following this, right? A lot of conversation in the political arena about what to do about this. But, you know, if the past sets a precedent for anything we do moving forward, whatever that solution is going to be, that is not going to come for a while. And if people put their eggs in that basket, guess what's going to happen at the end? All those eggs are going to be broken. You feel what I'm saying here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, one of the things we really look at too is making sure, and if I could leave your listeners with anything, it's explore your options, but, you know, start saving as soon as possible, because, you know, we do have a great advantage here with the 529 plan, with the number of tax advantages that you get with it. And as you said, don't know how long that's going to last, but putting that money away now, is one of the best ways to make sure that your children are prepared.
Yeah. Okay. So let's dig deep a little bit into this. You know, we're talking about 529 college, right? 529, everybody remember that. But there are some questions that people don't even know how to even ask them or what the questions are. Let's take us through what this particular plan is going to help people solve. What's the problem that it solves for folks? If that makes sense, so that question.
Yeah, absolutely. So what it helps solve is, how do I make sure that I am maximizing the amount of money that I can help my child with for their education or grandchild? And the beauty of the 529 plan is, you put money in, it grows tax-free, and then as long as it's coming out for education purposes, it comes out tax-free as well. And so a parent or a grandparent can put in $15,000 a year, and the other big part about that is the parent or grandparent, whoever the owner of that plan is, retains control. Because one of the things we have questions on from a lot of our clients is, okay, well, does this money go straight to the child as soon as they turn 18 or as soon as they graduate from high school? Because yeah. I don't think I want to give my child a blank check.
Yeah.
And the answer is no. You retain control of it. It goes for education expenses. And again, if the child doesn't use that for education, then you can change the beneficiary. And if you want to go back to school yourself, or if you want to have somebody else that you want to designate that uses that money for education, you absolutely can.
You know, Tim, I got to ask you a question, because I didn't do a formal introduction of who you are. One of the things that I'm so interested in is, here you and I sit. I don't know if you know anything about me, but I am one of the most unlikely people. And I heard Ted introduce you to me. I'm one of the most unlikely people on the planet to be sitting here with a doctorate. I really am. I mean, I'm a girl from the Bronx. I mean, I barely graduated high school. I was homeless at 17, right? But here you are, right? You're somebody, both of us in telecommunications industry, you have degrees in finance, economics, right? You have a master's in finance. And I got to ask you one question. Did you think that we would be here? Did you think that we would be having conversations to solve a problem where our future of our children and even adults that are going on and getting advanced degrees, did you think we'd have this kind of state of affairs that needs the kind of solution you're talking about? I'll tell you, I didn't. I must have had some illusion about education.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would say if you would have asked me this 30 years ago,
yeah,
probably not. Probably not, because I worked my way through college and actually did my master's at night. Yeah. And so, but when I look at that, and I've got two boys myself, when I look at what I did, and a lot of that was character building, but a lot of that also created a level of anxiety that if I can help alleviate some of that anxiety, yeah, that's what I want to be able to do with this.
Yeah. I mean, and look, we're talking about Safer Education Day, right? That's what's got, let's talk about the history of this. And also let's talk about the role Edward Jones is playing in all this, you know, and that is the website, correct? For people to go to, what's the best way for folks to find out more about this, Tim?
Absolutely. So edwardjones.com, we have a number of branches. So we've got 14,000 plus branches around the country. A number of them are doing very specific things on 529 day. Mm-hmm. But all you do is go to edwardjones.com, put your zip code in, and it'll tell you the local branches to you. And then just give one of them a call or even stop by.
Yeah.
But no, the 529 plan's actually been around for about 23 years.
Wow.
In fact,
wow.
We were joking earlier, you might call it the original GoFundMe program, because they did set it up. And actually, Congress last year just expanded it, or I'm sorry, 2 years ago, to allow for it to be used for K through 12 expenses as well. So it really is a very versatile tool that not a lot of people are aware of, and even fewer are using.
Yeah. What do you think are the greatest challenges, Tim, if I could ask you, what is the greatest challenges that you have discovered that parents face in not even clicking on a button and wanting to know? I mean, it's almost like we're in avoidance mode, right? But what are the greatest challenges, and how do we help parents overcome that? As a matter of fact, I got to tell you, I got to talk to parents and grandparents, because I don't know whether you guys know this at Edward Jones, but one of the most important motivator facilitators comes from grandparents. You know, grandparents mm-hmm. are really becoming, hey, you got to do this for the kid. What do you think the challenges are, and what can we do to move beyond, you know, this avoidance of parents to even check on what's available?
You know, that is a really good question. And I think as we talk to clients, and this isn't I'd say specific to even saving for education, but, you know, really kind of looking to the future, there are so many things that are in our face every day that planning for the future seems like something I can maybe do later, because there's so many urgent things that I have to deal with right now. And what we really try to help our clients understand is, yes, everything that's going on today is very important, but if we don't prepare for the future, then it's not going to get any better. So we really try to help them see that starting today, whether it's saving for education or any of your other goals or needs, is time well spent.
Yeah, and let's just give out the specifics on this. We're talking about, based on the latest studies that you all did, 71% don't know what a 529 plan is. Break it down really quickly for people. I know we've got a couple of minutes left. Let's just tell folks what kind of help they can get here with the 529 plan.
So with the 529 plan, that it grows tax-free, and as long as you are taking the money out for education expenses, it comes out tax-free as well, so you don't get taxed on any of the gains. Parents, grandparents, others can contribute to it. And even though you retain control of the assets, so that they don't go to the child, but one of the other beauties is, even though you retain control, once you contribute that money to a 529 plan, it's not considered part of your estate for estate tax purposes. So there are all kinds of advantages. And what we would recommend is, number one, talk to a financial professional. And you can find an Edward Jones advisor if you want at edwardjones.com. But most importantly is start as early as possible. Because the earlier you start, the better you're going to be able to help your child. But also, if you've got a 10-year-old, 15-year-old child, don't think that there's no point in starting because it's too late, because every bit is going to help.
Yeah. And look, what we're talking about is the rising cost. We're not just talking about the rising cost of tuition. So let's be very clear here with this. We're talking about tuition and fees and books and supplies and room and board, computers, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we're talking about things that folks are looking at and don't even consider as part of the journey. I know when I went back to school, right, for my, like you, for an advanced degree, man, tuition was like such a small part of it. Thank goodness I had some credit cards, you know. But look,
right.
Thank you. I mean, seriously, my first year I paid on my credit cards. I'm not saying folks don't do that. Don't do that. For me, I was an older student and I didn't really expect to get fired from my job after 25 years. Listen. Thank you for this. One last question. I'd love to know your personal message today. I also want to, you know, please mention how people can find out more, because you've got a lot of information on the website.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Pat. I would say, again, if you take nothing else away, it's take some time, think about the future, because that time is going to be well spent. And we've got a number of offices around the country to help. Go to edwardjones.com, put in your zip code, and that should bring up a number of local offices that can help you out.
Wow. Thank you so much. I know you got a busy day. I know you're rocking on, but I'll tell you what, this is a message that we're going to keep playing. We're going to keep tapping into the multi-generational folks affected by this. And thank you so much for opening up the door so that our future and our children and some of you adults going back, the future is for you. Thank you so much, Tim. We're going to take a short break. Everybody, we'll be right back. Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to our fabulous news segment. Heather Boleyn joining me here today as superintendent of Great Lakes Cyber Academy. And what the topic is today is an extension of what we have been talking about when it comes to where we are, what we need to know, and how we all strive to be better at who we are and better at what we do. Many of you have heard me share my stories of what it was like to go back to school. But what does it mean to be a student in today's world with so many of the things happening? So how are we going to protect our children's mental health and the effects in the classroom? How do we do that? This is a topic that has been near and dear to my heart, certainly has a lot to do with my childhood upbringing, living in the Bronx, New York, and being faced with trauma on the streets every day. Today, Heather is going to take us through what this means to understand the impact. With more than 30 years experience in education, her work is about educational leadership and support of families for their future after high school. Heather, it's great. Thank you for joining me here today.
Thank you for having me.
Part of what I'm saying, and love you to chime in on this, is, you know, I am somebody that grew up as a kid on the streets of New York, so to speak, the infamous District 14, as some people know it. But that doesn't tell the whole story. I'm not even sure if we have scratched the surface of what it means to consider mental health when it comes to learning. I don't think we have. And I'm so interested in how this has become a passion and purpose for you.
You know, one of the things that I've learned over the last almost 30 years is what we know about the brain and how we learn doesn't even begin to describe how important it is, or why it's important that our teachers understand that and our parents understand that about, you know, our kids today. And this whole notion of trauma-informed schools and, you know, the effects of trauma on learning and students' brains and how they function, we just don't simply understand enough about it. So it's vital that we make it something that we talk about and that we're aware of and that we learn more about.
Let's talk about the latest research that's come out, because you're absolutely right. I mean, there's nothing that any of us have ever gained from keeping secrets around this, right? I'm very familiar with things. Yeah. So anxiety and depression, a couple of studies came out recently. One of them pinpointed our country, the United States of America, as one of the highest, if not the highest, anxiety ridden country in the world. And secondarily, you know, I know what anxiety and depression is like firsthand. I mean, my mom committed suicide. And so I'm very familiar with that. But here's what we don't know. We don't know let's just call it the deep seething, slow burning impact of what happens with anxiety and depression. Give us an idea of what you've discovered. And is it cross-generational?
You know, I believe that it may be. You know, we see a lot of the trauma and things that happened in the parent's life impacting now the student's life, even if it's just the impression that the parent has about school and how that colors the way that the student looks at it for themselves. So we have to be aware of that. We're really dealing with the whole family. But I think the biggest thing that we don't understand a lot about is that everybody brings their own perspective and their own influences and their own way of looking at things to the mix. And we have to be cognizant of that. We have to take that into account. So, you know, when I have a classroom where the teacher may be impacted themselves, you know, how they're going to react to students in their classroom is going to be different than a teacher who may not understand that and may have a student who is dealing with trauma, you know, or anxiety or depression themselves. And so we all have to be aware of that and the impact that we bring to the situation. But one of the things that we hear from our families the most is that that amount of anxiety or depression, you know, 70% of our teens are dealing with that according to the latest Pew research. And that is the primary reason why students come to an online setting. So it absolutely is something that we have to deal with, just like every other school across the nation.
And what we're looking at, and this is what today's conversation with you all is really about, it's about bringing the information to the forefront. I want to make sure we mention the website that folks can find out more information several times throughout this short interview. But let's make sure folks know, how do folks know more about what you all are doing, but most importantly, more about what we're talking about here today?
Right. Our school website is www.greatlakes.com. cyberacademy.com. And on that website, they can get a hold of me. I can direct their questions and their inquiries to the right professional on my staff, be it a counselor or a school social worker, you know, maybe it's an administrator or a teacher, you know, whomever that is most appropriate for them to be in touch with. And you don't have to be a student in our school to get that information. You know, we're here to help all of our students and all of our families. We just want our kids to be educated because that's what's important for our future. Mm-hmm. And anything we can do to help is really, our, you know, our charge.
I want to ask you, as this conversation, and you're taking this out in many interviews, I want to ask you what you believe is our greatest challenge. Two parts to this. One, in understanding the magnitude, meaning the depth and breadth of this situation, mental health, right? And academic performance, like what's going on in our schools. That's number one. And number two, what do you see as our greatest challenges to provide an absolutely stellar educational environment?
I'm going to start with the second one. I think our biggest challenge is just understanding how mental health impacts different people differently. There isn't one perfect answer. You know, if I have a broken leg, mm-hmm. I can take, you know, a kid to a doctor and they'll set it and it mends and they're fixed and everything is good. But if they're dealing with anxiety or depression, there isn't a quick fix. There isn't a one size fits all answer to that. So I think our biggest challenge is just being able to work with individuals and personalize the response that they need in order to help them, you know, grow and deal with their situation and hopefully get better so that they can, you know, lead a productive life and all of those things, or, you know, at least figure out how that happens for them with what they're dealing with. And I think the biggest issue here is, we don't talk enough about mental health. We don't see it as, you know, a disease or a disability or a problem that we need to help. You know, it's easy for us to understand and recognize physical injury, you know, but mental issues are very taboo in many ways. And we still don't want to talk about it. And we need to do that to better understand how we can help our students holistically to be, you know, whole people, you know, with everything under consideration, not just the things that it's easy for us to talk about.
You know, certainly if folks go to the website, there's a document that I looked at, and I believe you're the author of the document. And it really was the document I looked at where it talks about the school improvement, a single building district improvement plan. And even though it's a single building, I went through this document you put together, and you really touch upon many, many things that it doesn't matter where you are. If folks look at this and look at the resources you provided, what they're going to find is they're going to find a way to say, wait a minute, that's me too. This is me too. That's our school. That's our situation. And what I love about this, Heather, is that I think a lot of the problem is that an individual school sees that there's something going on. Let's just call it something between you and me. Let's just call it something going on. And one, they don't know what to do. And two, they don't feel comfortable in addressing it in their school because of what the backlash might be. Isn't this a catch-22, so to speak? Here we've got some emotional well-being issues, but let's not let the cat out of the bag, so to speak.
Yeah, that is a big problem. You know, and I think that what really that saying is, if that's a me too kind of, you know, that's what I'm dealing with, that's what I'm, because you're absolutely right, what we're describing could happen in any different school district, you know, not just the one that they're in. So, you know, making sure that folks understand that if they don't feel comfortable where they're at and they're not getting the answers that really resonate, you know, in their lives for their situation, then reach outside of those four walls of their small district, you know, or their large district for, you know, for that matter, and really inquire with others that they may, you know, come across or be, have access to, or really just want to reach out to say, you know, what else is out there for me? What else can I, you know, make sure is accessible to me? You know, maybe there's a better fit, because one of the things I say to my families and my parents all the time, you know, and my teachers is, it's about the fit. You have to make sure that what's happening for you in that environment works for you. And if it doesn't, you need to find a better fit for you. Because unless you're in a, an environment where, you know, you're accepted and you feel valued and you get the support that you need, you're not going to be able to grow as an individual, as a student, you know, as a learner, all of those things. So it might not be the right fit where they're at. And there definitely is a better fit out there. They just have to be willing to go find it.
Thank you for saying that. Here's sort of the last part of the questions that I want to bring up, because this is really at the crux or the core of I think, what the message is today. It's a term that I learned when I went back to school in 1991, and I was studying the consequences of trauma, things like downsizing for employees, right? But the ripple effect of that on family, the level of insecurity, and it broadened to the level of insecurity and then broken promises. But the term that was underneath it all in the most devastating consequences and research and empirical, if you could even measure empirically, was emotional well-being. And I remember thinking about that and looking at it because I was reflecting upon my own job loss experience. And I went on to study this for 11 years. But what I found was that once we get underneath at being able to express to parents, to schools, what emotional well-being is the way you all have done it, then we can start to look at solutions. Tell us about emotional well-being and how that is tied in to the level of safety. You know, security and safety are interchangeable. But this is a big thing in schools, and doesn't it affect not just students, but doesn't it also affect teachers?
Oh, absolutely. It affects all of the participants and the players, from those who work at that school to those who attend that school to those that support that school. So everybody has to be aware of this. And we look at emotional well-being more from an academic perspective, per se. Yep. We call it social emotional learning. That to me is just a catchphrase for what we've known all along in that, you know, folks have to have a sense of belonging. They have to feel like they're valued. They have to feel like they matter where they're at in order for all of that academic stuff that we're responsible for doing, can be, you know, occurring and can be, proceeding forward. And so one of the things that we start with our teachers and with our families, with our students, is that connection, that relationship, that rapport. We make sure that students feel like they're connected to our school in some way. And not every teacher can connect with every student, and not every student can connect with every teacher, but we start with at least one. You know, is there one adult in this school that connect with that student so that they can help shepherd them through the process? And then we get very good at making sure that we implement or infuse mm-hmm. that social emotional well-being in all of the lessons and all of the conversations and all of the things that we do with our students and our families. So it's all kind of like, you know, those old Ragu commercials. It's in there, you know, we have all of those components. And we're not isolating them, but we're not forgetting them either.
Yeah. And thank you for that. Now, look, I know you've got to go off and continue this passionate and purposeful message on the airwaves. So first of all, I want to thank you for doing this. I mean, this is a topic that, you know, when somebody asked me a couple of weeks ago what I thought the greatest challenge was to learning, because I'm a big advocate of learning, having gone back to school later in my life, and I'm what you call learning different. So I have a little, what do they used to call it? They used to call you learning challenged. Now I'm learning different. But one of the things I know is if I am not, and our students are not, and our teachers are not in a good emotional and mental state, the ripple effect of that is devastating. So please tell folks how they can find out more about you, the organization. And one last question, what's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with today? And thank you, Heather, for what you do.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me. The best way to get a hold of us or start that journey is www.greatlakescyberacademy.com. And I'd be happy to reach out to any of your listeners who would like to know more information. And, you know, thank you so much for the opportunity to give you my personal message. And my personal message is learning is so, so vital and so important. We have to make it a priority in everything that we do. You know, I always tell my kids, I love school so much, I never left it. And I always laugh at that. But that's just exactly how valuable it is. So, you know, make sure you make learning a priority and education of, you know, a valued thing in everything that you do. There's learning opportunities everywhere. You don't have to just go to school to do it. You know, although school's great, but you can learn anywhere you're at in any moment of your day.
Yeah, that's so funny because you and I are two peas in a pod. When I left school, I moved right into what we now know 15 years ago was doing a radio show that's all positive talk radio. And we started our own network in 2009. So I get teased a lot about the fact that I too moved from a 10-year journey in a graduate program to continue to teach and learn, because I think we're all students of a higher purpose. Thank you, Heather.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, everybody, we're gonna take a short break. Please go check it out. Please check this out. One of the most important pivotal issues of our time. It really is. This is the thing. 5-10 years from now, you're going to look back on and say, why didn't we listen to Heather? Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome. This is our good news segment. Actually, this is our great news segment today. I am so thrilled to have AJ Barkley joining us here today. SVP, Neighborhood Lending Executive, Consumer Lending at Bank of America. Now, many of you have seen that we have been bringing you these segments from Bank of America on information, everything from small business loans. Now we are taking this on. We're taking on the conversation about a report that finds Gen Zers, they got the memo. Last time we talked, they got the memo on what they want in the workplace. Today, they got the memo on what it means in this country to own a home. AJ is joining us here today. And AJ, I know that you are up close and personal about this. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And I'm like really blown away with these Gen Zers. I don't know if you were, but I was like taken aback and very impressed.
Yeah. Actually work with a few of them here at the studio. So I am blown away. I mean, I was blown away earlier, and maybe this will tie this all together. When they were asked about what they wanted most in the workplace, many people thought money, job, career. No, they said they wanted empathy. So they wanted compassion in the workplace. You know how many decades it's been since we heard that? So here we are talking about home buying. So doesn't this kind of make sense then that we're looking at generation here that has some very specific values? Tell us about the report. Is this a line for you when you hear me talk about what they want in work and what you found in your research and study?
It does. It's a perfect alignment. And, it resonates in their thoughts around home ownership. So we asked them, what do you want to do in the next, they want to buy a home in the next 5 years before they're 30 years old. I would not have even be myself. I was just thinking about myself at that time. That would not have been a priority. And then we said, well, what would you do then if that's important to you? What would you do then as you think about planning for that? If we gave you $5,000, what would you do? And they said, like, look, if you're going to give me money, or if I have money, or I'm saving money, I am prioritizing to prepare for down payment over frivolous spending. They said that they would put off planning for their dream wedding in terms of the amount of spend. They would stop a shopping spree, and they wouldn't necessarily go on vacation. I mean, these are things that they are making intentional decisions about in order to be planful for down payment. These additional sacrifices I thought were pretty impactful, speaks to what you just said. 48% said they would go get a second job. They said they'd cut back on extracurricular activities. And in terms of college, I thought this was interesting in terms of student loan debt. They said they would be willing to attend a university that would leave them less student debt. And then the last one that I think, you know, really talks to just maturity and just like really focus on what's important. They said, look, I know I want a dream home, but I may not be able to get everything I want in my home. I'm going to redefine my wish list to get into a home. So I may want 3 bedrooms, 2 baths and a spa, but I may not be able to get all of that. I want to go ahead and make the sacrifices so I get into a home, but I know having a home helps me to build long-term wealth. So I think I was very, very impressed. And then just how and why and how they would kind of be deliberate in their savings.
Yeah, I love that we're talking about them being deliberate. One of the really most popular commercials on television right now is exactly about what we're talking about. You know, they figure this key couple that's going out for dinner 24/7 every night, dinner. And they have this idea that they want to do something different, buy a home, whatever it is. I mean, they just taken right out of your playbook, really. And so what they watch now is what a lot of we're seeing now is they're not going out for dinner and they're counting not pennies, but dollars around this. What do you think the motivation is? Tell us a little bit about what you found in terms of, you know, what's behind this beautiful, beautiful, what we call here the American dream, which really was completely deflated a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think they're motivated a little differently, right? One, they get that they want to build wealth over time. Almost 50% said they're motivated to buy a home because they understand it's a means to wealth, right? You purchase a home, you get your home, you may or may not have equity in your home at some point in time. You think about retirement. You think about rental property in the future. You think about your family. You think about, you know, supporting it, whatever it is. And so that's extremely important. They also have a desire to live in specific neighborhoods. And some of those neighborhoods don't have rental. It is actually purchased property, right? And so they want to be there. So they want to make those sacrifices. And this last one, you know, having a Gen Zer warms my heart, but they want to make their family proud.
Yeah.
Like, they want to demonstrate maturity and deliberate focus on living their dreams and accomplishing their priorities. So I thought that was, you know, 33%. That was a motivation for them.
What did you find? I don't know if you guys compared this, you all compared this, but what did you find when you compare Generation Z maybe to Generation X? I mean, you know, there's so much conversation about this generation and that generation. You know, did you see a marked difference in, you know, what those folks want for their future?
Yeah, I think the millennials were really more focused. I mean, I think they wanted wealth. I think everybody wants that.
Yeah.
But I think there may have been some aversion to, I need to save, not the right time. I don't want to necessarily make all those sacrifices. What we do know, and the data showed that the same barriers existed whether you were a Gen Z or a millennial or Gen Xer or a baby boomer in terms of down payment and closing costs.
Yep.
And I think the barriers existed regardless of where you are. The Gen Zers see this as a barrier, but they also see it as less of a challenge than the prior generations, if that makes sense.
Well,
they're like, look, I can get there.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to own it. And I'm going to take advantage of resources and tools to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it makes very good sense because you have generations that go back a little bit further. It went through, you know, some of the most difficult times in our economy. Right. And what we went through. And, you know, when you go even further back, you know, you saw the repeal of the psychological contract in work. So it makes sense that we're looking at a fresh start in this generation. I want to ask you, this is a question that came in last conversation I had with one of your executives at Bank of America, a friend of mine, actually. They want to know, how do we talk to folks that have been out there attempting to get a home about what you all are offering that might be different than what they've imagined before? Tell us what Bank of America is doing here.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what we've just announced in early April, but then I'll tell you how you get to it. So
Okay. We're
committed to first-time home buyers and our moderate-income clients across the country. And so we launched or announced on April 2nd our $5 billion commitment to do that through putting 20,000 more people in homes over the next 5 years. And we're doing it through three major ways, resources, tool products, solution sets to get there. One, our we have a number of 3% down payment mortgage solutions. Right, I think there's this misnomer that you got to put 20% down or 10% down. We have solutions at 3%. Two, down payment assistance to help people get in. That's part of the largest expense to get into a home initially, and then closing cost assistance. So that is available. We are rolling out the down payment assistance program later this quarter, but those programs exist today. And then the way that I would have people get in there and just understand what is eligible to them, we have a phenomenal digital mortgage experience which seamlessly guides clients through the mortgage process via our mobile banking and online platforms. And so in the convenience of their own home, they can kind of maneuver through, learn, understand, get up to speed on the mortgage process, and then have the opportunity to talk to a phenomenal specialist, lending specialist, that is contemporary of all things lending. And then they can help customize for that particular client on what it is they're trying to solve. And then also you can obviously go into a financial center and meet with a teammate as well. And then we also have other resources through homebuyer education, right? And then Better Money Habits to just help you figure out how to just get my head wrapped around my finances in general. So there's multiple resources and tools, but the one thing is you got to go where you have a trusted person to help you, and that's contemporary on what's available today.
Yeah. What is the best way for people to find out more? And then I have a question about definition of first-time homebuyer. How can people find out more?
Sure. And, we have our Homebuyers Insight Report and additional home buying resources on bankofamerica.com/homebuyersreport. That's bankofamerica.com/homebuyersreport.
Okay, question about first-time homebuyer. This comes up quite often. First-time homebuyer has multiple meanings in the market. Can you give us the, what you all are referring to when you refer to first-time homebuyer? In some markets, it means, well, you haven't bought a home in 10 or 20 years. But in others, it really means first-time homebuyer.
It's first-time homebuyers in terms of Bank of America. There's no timeline aligned to it. So this is your first entry into the marketplace.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So as we look at this, right, let's give us a rundown now for folks that may not remember this. I know we've got a few minutes left, but there are definitely some benefits to homeownership. Let's remind people what those are, AJ, if we could.
Oh, absolutely. There's three major things. One, to build wealth over time. Homeownership, owning a home, positions you for long-term wealth. Build equity in your home. You have long-term saving solutions, ways to actually get access to funds in emergency, whatever the situation is, building wealth over time. Two, you get to live in a desirable neighborhood. You get to pick where you want to be. And the other piece that I think is really important between renting and owning and the home ownership, when you own a home, the likelihood of your mortgage payment changing year over year, month over month is unlikely, right, depending on your solution. If you rent, the likelihood of your rent going up every 12 months, 18 months when your lease is actually coming up for review is likely. And so this actually creates a level of stability. In many cases, your mortgage is less than your rental payment. So those would be the reasons that I would say are extremely important.
One of the things, too, that if we could talk about it as well, is we're looking at the amount of dollars that you will have put forth and the resources. When people go to your website, they're going to find a lot of information. What do you think holds first-time homebuyers back from exploring this?
I just think that they it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And that's why it could be totally overwhelming, because when you got the urban myths and then it's a lot of information, what holds you back is not talking to a specialist, someone that does this every day, that is they are contemporary on the resources and tool available that can be customized by client. That is what, and then people are afraid to ask the question. So I would strongly encourage anyone that's listening to us today to leverage the tools again through the digital mortgage experience, which is at bankofamerica.com/homebuyersreport. You can get there and or walk into your financial center and say, hey, I am interested in purchasing a home. I'm looking to understand home ownership. I need help. and we will absolutely have a teammate to assist you. That's what you got to do. That's the first step, right? You got to ask the question and talk to someone you trust.
Yeah. What I find interesting about this, you know, fresh new generation is, you know, many of us dreaded the idea of going back and living with our parents. You know that, right? They're like, I'm moving back home so I could save some money. Are you finding that a trend?
They are. And they're living with their family. They're borrowing money from their family and their in-laws.
Yeah.
But they're paying it back.
Yeah.
Like, they literally are not just saying, hey, help me out. They're saying, look, if you do help me out, I will absolutely pay, you know, be willing to pay you back. So they said that they'll receive the financial help. So they, more than the millennials, absolutely the down payment assistance and other family members. But the fact that they said, look, I'm going to be responsible and now I'm going to, you know, because this is my purchase, this is my investment, I'm going to invest in returning the funds that you have lent me, which I thought is powerful.
Oh, totally powerful. AJ, I know you got to run. Thank you so much. Can you please, two things. I'd love to have the website again and also information about how they can find out more on social media, et cetera. And then what's your personal message? What would you like to leave folks with?
All right, so my personal message is everyone has the ability to own a home and create, realize the dream of home ownership in a sustained manner. And I know I am. Every day when I get up as the neighborhood lending executive for the company, it is my mission to help that dream come alive for as many clients as possible. So I'm extremely excited about this. The way you get to learn more is bankofamerica.com home buyers report. And then, like I said, I would have you absolutely reach out to us through the digital mortgage experience, and that's at bankofamerica.com. It's going to be in that link, and then also into any of our financial centers. But thank you so much for the opportunity. I'd love to come back.
I hope you will.
To catch you up on how things are going, but thank you so much.
Okay, well, you know what? You have an open invitation to come back because we love what you all are doing. All the interviews we've done, all the people you all have helped at Bank of America have helped us with our small businesses, and by the way, me personally. So, yes, please come back.
Thank you so much.
All right, everybody, a short break. Please go check this report out, and please get yourself an appointment. We'll be right back.